Ah, yes, indeed, 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 dun, dun, dun. Yes, indeed. Ah, I don't know. I sat down one day with the acoustic and just played a couple riffs, so I don't know.
I think
sounds
it's great.
Good. Yeah, I've tried to do something better, and I just have not been able to do it. Anyway, Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and we were just talking about wonderful addictions. And why is it the addictions you like the most always are going to kill you? You should be up.
Okay. That's a little better.
Yeah. I think it's your headphone. It's this button right there. You can adjust yours as high as you want or low.
Okay.
I think you're plenty loud on the machine.
Okay.
Anyway, see what I mean?
Okay.
It goes up and down as you turn these knobs.
Nice.
All right.
I don't like touching knobs.
Yeah, well, I'm not big on touching knobs either. You know, they're way better things in the world to play with. Okay. Now that we've got all that out of the way, we're going to do a fishing report and part of the Friday get ready for the weekend stuff. And where are we going to start today?
Let's start up the river, since that's always been so slow, but not anymore.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
The Wild River Ride.
Right.
Yee!
Hey.
Hey, I'm trying to be excited
after
here.
That video footage of seeing Jeff yesterday out there, that's kind of terrifying. That's kind of an understatement.
A lot of water coming down that river right now. It's a great time to go up and go fishing, but be extra careful, because you anchor up wrong, you do something wrong, your boat's going to sink.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, people don't realize if you anchor off the back and the current's really strong, what happens is the anchor line wants to straighten out. So you're anchored to the bottom, your boat's up the top, it starts pulling. It will literally try to pull the boat down so that it can be, the rope can be even. That's, you know, laws of physics.
Right.
So when you're anchored off the front, your bow is kind of cutting the water, not creating that, not causing that back pressure. But when you anchor off the stern, if that stern grabs the water, that's a flat surface, and it's going to just, like in Boca Grande Pass, it will literally try to suck you under the water. And, you know, you're probably not going to die, but you're going to be there, you know, get your life jacket and just let it float you till you hit to the shore, and then walk back. And it's a long walk, boys and girls.
It's a very long walk.
Take a bottle of water with you, and maybe a lunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway,
terrifying.
Outside of the downside of this, tarpon.
Tarpon, unbelievable.
Tarpon. And more tarpon. And why are the tarpon there?
Well, tilapia.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's also because it's flushing down so many things. I mean, for the first time in probably 20 years, we're seeing that massive migration of tilapia getting flowed down the river. I mean, as far as great numbers, every year there's a few, especially once you get above like 761.
Right.
There's always a good number of them, but these ones are coming all the way down to 41 Bridge.
And highly unusual, but these little baby tilapia, back in the 80s and 90s, we used to use them for snook bait and tarpon bait. It was just the normal thing you did every year at this time, because the water was flowing so much. The massive rains we've had this year are now just getting to what normal was in the 80s and 90s. They say this is the most rainfall we've had, and I'm calling the BS card on that, because we used to get an inch, 2 inches a day back then.
Right.
And it was nothing. They had to build overflow things around some of the bridges and on roads and things to handle the amount of water. And they haven't flowed through those overpasses until this year in a long, long time.
Yeah, they just forget. I mean, let's face it, the general public has the attention span of a gnat.
Yeah, but I love history.
I think it's absolutely awesome.
The things that the most interesting in the world is watching things repeat themselves and repeat themselves and repeat themselves. This make the same mistakes over and over again. Just look at Washington. Go to D.C. and they make that mistake here, and then 4 years make it again, and 4 years make it again. It's just, you know, SOP there, standard operating procedure.
Right.
But up on the Peace River right now, get up there. You got three choices of lures that are really going to kick butt on the tarpon right now. And that would be the rattle trap, which would be your third. Number two would be the DOA bait buster. And number one would be the swimming mullet, the DOA swimming mullet.
Yep.
And we got to add in there the storm Yeah. Swim baits.
Yeah, the Storm swim baits are working really well.
That might even be number one.
Yeah, I mean, I think hookup ratio, they're about equal, but...
You got the DOA Baitbuster and Swimming Mullet, and then you got that Storm Swim Shad. It would be hard.
I think they're kind of all three fairly equal.
What I don't understand is why the Gulp doesn't do better. The Gulp swim baits.
Those hooks are straightening out.
Is that what it is? They're hooking fish on them, but they just can't keep the fish on them?
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
I just figured that out the other day, because Carl had an issue with it at first, and I just thought maybe he had a bad bag, but now I've had a couple different other guys say it's just straightening out.
That's why the Storm's kicking its butt, because, you know, the Gulp is a good bait.
Phenomenal. It swims... I honestly think it swims just a little bit nicer than the...
Than the Storm?
Than the Storm.
But you just can't keep a fish on it. So if you're going to, you can take the Gulp with you, back your drag down a full turn.
Yeah.
There's no other way to do it.
If you're getting those 10 to 20 pounders, it's working perfectly fine. But there's so many, I mean, the cool part about right now up on the river, like out in the 20 foot holes, which we'll get to, there's a lot of big tarpon.
Right.
Once you get up above like 41 bridge, they're from 5 pounders to 150 pounders. And there's enough of a variety where... You need to bring the heavy tackle with you because you never know what you're going to stick. But on, you know, that 10 to 30 pound range, those power baits are working great.
That's a little 3-inch and 4-inch ones, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, that would be excellent, but I say the number one lure for those little tarpon is still going to be my quarter ounce rattle trap.
Absolutely.
I don't care where you go in the world, rattle trap is the forgotten hero.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't start talking about it too much over the last years because I was kind of letting the little tarpon go, but the whole Boca Grande Pass thing kind of annoyed the heck out of me, so I said, okay, I'll teach people how to catch little tarpon.
Teach them how to catch tarpon year-round, and they don't have to go out and fight that chaos.
That was it. I mean, if the people want to catch tarpon, I can teach them how to do those little tarpon.
You
want to
catch tarpon and have a good time and not worry about politics? Come on in here.
Yeah, you get the anti-politics, which is almost worse sometimes.
Oh, yeah, sometimes, you know, we get going off on a tangent the wrong direction, I'm and then ranting. We look just as bad as they do.
Yeah, I rant too much.
No, but we all do every now and then.
Now, I've got an excuse.
At least you freely admit it.
Blood sugar issues, you know, I'm a diabetic, and I just found that out. And so I'm going to blame my blood sugar, and then I'm going to blame the radiation treatments to my brain. Listen, I had radiation shot in my brain. I had high blood sugar. Right? I got all excuses in the world.
You got all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, let's face it.
And they're documented.
Brain dead and, you know, chemically imbalanced. This is just, you know, hey. So.
How does chemically imbalanced work with brain dead, though?
Well, the sugar thing, you know, that affects your blood chemistry.
But if you're brain dead.
Well, I'm only partially brain dead. I have enough brain left to annoy you. So.
It's all
good.
Oh,
God.
But the tarpon are phenomenal. The afternoon bite's been more happening than the morning bite, but they've both been pretty darn good.
The only place I would really go and, like, anchor up is the third cut west or south of the Navigator, because you got the Navigator, then you got Lettuce Lake, then you got a dead-end cut, then you got a deep cut there. And if I was going to do that, I go to the north side of the river and anchor up in the shallows, cast out into that deep. The only spot I would anchor up to actually try and catch tarpon is when you go north of the Navigator, you go around, you make a right curve and then kind of a left U-turn. And when you get up to the next one, you're going to see a sand beach on your right-hand side and a long sweeping curve right before you go into the area by the water treatment plant.
That beach is underwater right now.
Yeah, but I mean, you still see the grass coming up. Should be able to see it a little bit, maybe not. It could be under 2-3 feet of water
by
now.
It's pretty gone.
But it's the curve right before you go into the water treatment plant. But you have to be way over on the shallow side because people come flying around that corner from the bridge, and they're not expecting a boat there.
Yeah.
And so you be way onto one side or the other. Do not be in the middle of that channel right there if you're trying to anchor because you will get hit.
Yeah,
somebody's going to fly around there with an airboat or something, and bad things will happen. So it's a great spot for fishing, but a dangerous spot to anchor right there because it's kind of a tight U-shaped curve.
Right.
So anyway, those are my two spots to anchor up and catch fish.
Yeah.
How's the catfish up there?
They've been not too bad. I mean, surprisingly enough, they're not creating a whole lot of chaos up there. There are a few around, but
nothing like, you know,
nothing like it was a month ago.
Of the harbor.
Yeah, the middle of the harbor's ate up with them.
So I think the massive flow of the river is actually pushing some of the catfish down,
yeah,
getting them out into the harbor. So everything that was up in the harbor now is out in the river is now out in the middle of the harbor. Why don't we just go there next? Because that's okay. Where the big tarpon seem to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, you could start your fishing up on the river and slowly work your way down along through the 41 bridge, heading towards marker 2, then marker 1, and then down to the 20-foot hole. And ladyfish are working phenomenal. The bait busters and the storms and the swimming mullet, all those are working absolutely incredible.
Now, the only thing I'm going to do different on my rattle trap in the harbor is up on the river, I'm throwing the quarter ounce. I get out in the harbor, I'm throwing 3/4 ounce.
Right.
I'm throwing the 3/4 or 1 ounce if I'm going to use a rattle trap out there. I switch from the one of their smallest to their biggest.
Right.
And it just seems to work. But so calling it, if you want to go tarpon fishing right now, put in either Lashley, probably be your best middle ground bet.
I think so.
And because Ponce is too much up in the harbor and it's shorter to get back to but further to run from, so we'll call right. it around Lashley right now. Head up river, you know, go 20 minutes up the river, get up around the Navigator, the water treatment plant, and fish your way back down for the tarpon. By mid-afternoon or by early afternoon, you want to be catching that the 41, past 41, get out to marker 2, marker 1, and the 20-foot holes by early afternoon.
Yeah.
And fish that afternoon bite in the harbor.
And keep your eyes open for a couple things. Either look for ladyfish that are popping a little bit. And then also, like, there's been some weird scum lines forming out there. Some right over by the mouth of the Myakka, some right down in the lower end of the first, you know, upper 20-foot hole. There's been some weird just scum lines forming in general, and that seems to be where your better concentrations of those fish are at. But definitely just keep a diligent eye for fish blowing up or free jumping.
Yeah, and get in the area, and don't worry about once you're there, just get kind of close and drift.
Yeah.
Don't try and anchor up and say, this is where I'm going to fish. You can do it if you've got bait and chum and all that, but you're going to be dealing with a gazillion catfish and everything
exactly.
else. And then best bet is just drifting.
And the coolest part is there's hardly anybody out there doing it. Whether you're on the river or down in the 20-foot holes, there's so many fish scattered all over the place that the handful of boats that are out there, you're not going to get bothered by anybody except for the occasional Yahoo that's using you for a channel marker as they're heading out because they
what
don't know where they're going.
People in Southwest Florida, they see a boat, they see a barge, they see a crane, and they use it for channel markers. I mean, I've watched them come
something
all
for line of sight.
Yeah, you know, a half a mile out of their way to buzz me when I've been on a barge and go back where they're going. It's like they have to have an object to point at.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
He's safe. He's floating.
Yeah, I guess that's it. You know,
that's the only thing I can figure, because I mean, I've watched him do it over there tarpon fishing on the outside of the bar on the west wall, literally in 6 feet of water, and watch a guy come around marker one and beeline it right towards us just to make a hard left again to go out towards marker 5 around Cape Hayes.
Yeah,
it's like, really? You just went like 3 miles out of your way to buzz us. Like,
well, watch cars in the interstate. They're always in a bunch.
Yeah.
And I know I'm a bit weird, but I'm that car that when you see the big bunch of vehicles there and the big bunch of vehicles way up ahead of you and there's that car in the middle all by itself, that's me.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you've ridden with me enough. I'm not...
No,
I'm not,
that's very true.
It's... And I do the same thing when I'm fishing. I go out and I look to the left. There's a whole bunch of boats. I go to the right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if they're all to the right, I go to the left.
Yeah.
I'm the weird, you know, I'm that guy who walks out in the middle of the woods by himself, you know.
Right.
So
wait, should
anyway,
be.
Well, you know, I guess everybody's got their comfort zone.
Well,
I think people in cities need to be around other stuff. You watch them going down the road and then they're doing 65, 70 miles an hour. Then all of a sudden they come up to a car that's doing 60 and they got to slow down and stay with that car.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get that part.
Why do they walk in up to our two counters and there's one person standing in line at the one and nobody at the other, but they want to go stand in line and wait?
Gotcha.
Same concept.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. You know, strange irrational behaviors of all of us. I have several irrational things that I do, you know.
Oh, yeah. We all have our little quirks.
Yeah, I think mine went beyond quark, though. I'm into quarks, you know.
Nice.
Okay, anyway, let's see. Back up. We've been doing the middle of the harbor. Let's jump back and hit Peace, Port Charlotte Canal System. What's going on there?
Well, the Port Charlotte Canal System has been pretty good with all this rain and everything. The spillways anywhere around some of the bridges, like the Midway Bridge, Spring Lake, all those bridges have been holding some fish. You know, mostly some mangrove snapper and a few snook.
I can tell you, with the weather as gorgeous it is, and if you're in a place where the weather's bad, come here, because I'm telling you, it's perfect. The weather's just absolutely, I mean, it's cool, it's not...
It's getting ready to get cooler, too, this weekend. Yeah,
it's warm during the day, it's not hot, and it's comfortable, nights are, I mean... Oh, it's damn near awesome. Perfect. Yeah, I mean, and you can get out on the water, and let's say you don't want to travel too far and you want to catch some fish. You put in West Spring Lake, go up the canal rather than around out the bridges towards the harbor, and get up around that bridge by Midway, or take that right that goes over to 41. Plenty of fish.
Absolutely.
You're going to have a great time. And you don't have to go anywhere. You never go above idle.
Right.
And so if you got a little boat and you're looking just to catch some fish, hit those bridges.
Yeah.
It's easy. It takes you... At an idle, you're going to be, and I'm trolling the whole way out there. I got probably the Storm Twitch on one side, and I would say the small Maverick Chartreuse on the other side, and I would just troll to those bridges. So you're going to catch fish along the way, hopefully, and then when you get there, you've got fish to catch. So, you know, all good.
The mouths of the canals, too, have been doing fair, you know, and it's been sporadic. You know, one day's phenomenal, and the next couple days have been a little on the slow side. But mangrove snapper, some snook, a few incidental redfish, getting a few more reports of some sand bream moving around. And, of course, there's been, you know, the banner year besides the mangrove snapper, our black drum have come back pretty incredible.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
You know, we're lucky because we went several years there. It wasn't like it was on the low cycle of things. It stayed on that low cycle for, what, 6-7 years at least for black drum?
Yeah, about 4 or 5 years ago it started. We're starting to see them increase and come back. And I think it's all about the weather. I just think it's about the weather. How much rain we get or don't get and what the temperatures are and all that. That's just got to be the way it is.
Right.
Getting back... over towards the Myakka River, I know you're going to tell me all about the cutoff and stuff, but I'm going to suggest trolling the big 16 bomber, just the regular old 16 snook lure through there.
Mm-hmm. Through the cutoff or out of
out in the Myakka River itself. I would, if I'm moving, I would like to be trolling that bomber.
Right.
I think put a DOA bait buster swim mullet on one side and put the bomber on the other. I got a hunch that it's time that one just kicks off. Nobody's throwing it. It's been several years since anybody's really used them. It might be time.
See, and I would do that, but I'll use my customized lure from your idea. You know, I'm not a big treble hook fan.
I modified it, then you modified it, so it's right. The Robert lure.
Yeah, but it's all based off your idea with it, and it just works.
Go on to the next. What is it?
I remove all the treble hooks off, and all I do is put a single stinger hook on the back of one of those, like, now, speed jigs.
If you're doing, have you ever done vertical jigging, you know, with the speed jigs on grouper?
Mm-hmm.
You take one of the hooks from that, you put it on the back eye of the bomber, and so you have a single circle or J hook, and just drag it or cast it. I like trolling them. But
yeah, they troll fine with it. They troll, you can't quite go quite as fast with that single hook on it as you could with the treble hooks on it. It wants to blow out a little faster, but it's not much of a difference.
You got
to
let a little more line out.
Yeah.
That's good, too. It gets a little further away from the boat. But use a six. Don't try and do this with your 40 reel. It's got to be a 50 or 60. You need a lot of line. You need heavy. Because when you get hit on this, you've got to hit.
Absolutely.
I mean... So, and, anyway, but what else is going on out there?
On the Myakka side of Hog Island, out there in some of that deeper grass, there's been a few incidental pompano, quite a mixture of redfish, a few snook. It's been a little quiet, you know, with all this fresh water coming down. This whole upper end of the harbor, literally, it's going to be one day is pretty good, and the next couple days are a little slow. And the tide seems to make a little bit of a difference, but it's been weird because one day it's the outgoing tide on that last half, And then the next day, it's the full-blown incoming tide only. Once that tide goes slack and starts to turn, it's dead. Done.
So it could be the duration of the tide. If it's a really, really long incoming tide, that first part of that outgoing tide is just going to be the best. On a shorter tide, though, it's just going to be incoming because it's when you get that water moving, it comes in from Boca Raton Pass, it hits the east side, comes up the east side, then is deflected off of Punta Gorda and pushes right at the mouth of the Maca River.
Right.
And as if the tide is long enough, it's going to push that nice salt water almost up, you know, past Elgin, and then you get that good flush saltwater movement coming back, and that gets the opposite things all get stirred up, and that's I think that would be your tide difference. Watch and see if that comes up, because I found that true in other places. But the longer the tide, the more likely that first part of the outgoing is going to be really good. The shorter the tide, the more it's going to be on the incoming.
I can see that. Going up towards El Jobin, night fishing at El Jobin's been pretty good. There's been some real nice mangrove snapper. Snook have been doing fair. A lot of little juvenile tarpon. But once you get on the other side of El Jobin, going just up the river, just a little ways, that first about 1 mile stretch there, there's some little scattered sandbars and oyster patches. There's been some guys doing some pretty good redfish up there. Not giants, but in the slot size redfish.
A lot of fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great, you know, fun and great eating, but it's kind of funny because it's very underfished for as many homes that are up there and how nice those canals are and stuff. It's just...
Well, it's like if you live up here, you got to run down to the south end of the east side or over the west side, Bow Bay, Turtle Bay, and people live down in Pirate Harbor, run across the way, and people go to Pirate Harbor to go fishing, and the people that live there go somewhere else to go fishing.
Right.
If you live on the east side of the lake, you fish the west side. If you live on the west side, you fish the east side. It's just normal.
Standing on shore, you cast out, and if you're in a boat, you cast to the shore.
See? You know, and speaking of quirky things, I got to tell you, we just finished up doing the place-by-place fishing report, the one you read on our fishing report page. And one of the reasons, well, we started this because we were guest hosting on a nationally syndicated show. But I really got to say, this is so much easier than typing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, poor Robert's sitting there while I'm feeding my nicotine addiction, drinking coffee, and he's sitting there viciously chewing gum, trying not to feed his addiction. But, yes.
Am I getting loud with it?
No, you're fine. I just think, you know, I was just thinking how luxurious this is, you know, get to sit here and I'm drinking coffee, feeding my nicotine addiction, going, man, this beats the heck out of typing.
Oh, yes, in a heartbeat.
My fingers.
And God bless you for doing it and putting up with me talking while you're trying to type. You know,
it's
good stuff.
We were doing the Maca. What I'd like to do now is jump back into PGI canals.
Okay. PGI canals are, you know, there again, I mean, we can't talk about it enough, really. It's almost annoying, but it's still true. The mangrove snapper, still phenomenal. Evening bite seems to be better on the mangroves than at night for some of your bigger ones, but they're just catching them consistently throughout the entire canal system, even at the miles and even way into the back in the bird section. They're just everywhere. A lot of juvenile tarpon, especially in the back.
And try to find the docks with the biggest boats. And don't cast at somebody's, you know, $1 million boat, you know, with a sinker. It's just rude. If you chip the gel coat, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And you want to stay away from the boats. One of the best tricks I use is to free line a bait towards whichever end of the boat the tide's coming from, and then just let it drift underneath. Now, I very seldom do it if the tide's coming from the back of the boat because you tend to get hung on a prop.
Right.
But anytime the tide's hitting the bow of the boat, I'll cast 4 or 5 feet in front of the boat, just free line, and by the time it hits the boat, it'll sweep right underneath and go along, and you get those big fish out from underneath those boats. No destruction, no problems. You know, I understand why people don't want you fishing their docks, but if you do it properly, and, you know, you just have to use your head. If it was your boat people were throwing sinkers at, how mad would you get? You know, so you're going to, if you... in a parking lot of a shopping center with your boat on the trailer and somebody starts throwing rocks at it, wouldn't it annoy you a little bit?
Exactly.
So it's the same thing. Throwing a sinker at a boat, it's just the same as somebody throwing a rock at it. So free line around the boats, you know, don't throw right at the boat. Throw in front of it, let your bait drift underneath.
Absolutely. Been some black drum up in there still. The snook are all over the place, but they've been real hit or miss. Most of the guys that are catching them are doing it at night. The big boys still haven't really moved up in there in any good consistent numbers. What else is going on up in there? Haven't really heard of anything odd or out of the ordinary up in there yet, but I think over these next 3 or 4 weeks, you're going to see some real significant changes. You should start to see some flounder moving up at the entrances of the canals and some pompano. But with all this rain right now, it's going to probably take a couple weeks before it really starts to get kicking with that.
Cool. And let's see. Let's drop over to the west side, and then we'll come back into the east side. We'll just kind of work our way out of the full harbor.
Sounds good.
So what's up in the west?
The west side, basically going up into Cattle Dock Point, there has been a few redfish right there at the entrance and right by the locks, but a couple guys have been trolling in there on their way out and going back in, obviously, and catching a few big snook, been some juvenile tarpon up in there.
So if you live up in South Gulf Cove, once you get inside, you know, before the locks, troll a little bit, and once you get through the locks, put your lures out and troll down that canal, because you're missing some really good fish that way.
Absolutely.
And I would have like a 16 bomber, big lure on one side trying to attract those bigger fish, and on the other side, either the, I would go back to my small maverick or the storm twitch. Mm-hmm. And
or just, you know, a nice like half or three quarter ounce spoon would work too.
Yeah, spoon would probably be the best bet. You're probably going to catch more fish on the spoon. Make sure you've got a AFW ball bearing swivel on it, or even better, what I would do is put the AFW ball bearing snap swivel on the spoon itself, and then in front of that, put the Sampo ball bearing swivel in between your line and your leader. Give you double up protection against line twist. And a regular snap swivel doesn't swivel. If it does not have ball bearings in it, it's not going to work. And if it's not an AFW, a Sampo, what's the other one?
Spro.
There? Spro. It goes in order of AFW, Spro, and Sampo being the best, you know, but correspondingly much more expensive. But I'm going to put the AFW, which actually works really well for the money. I mean, it's a great,
it's a really,
swivel,
really
for
nice
the money.
Swivel for the money.
And, you know, it's number three in the choices, and it's half the price of the other ones. But I put that next to the spoon where I'm likely to lose it. I leave the Sampo ball bearing swivel up between my line and my leader where I'm much less likely to lose that $2-3 swivel.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But troll that spoon with that combination, and you're going to have a good day.
As you come out there and you're working your way south along the west wall, it's been kind of hit or miss until you get below the radio tower. There's been a few snook and a few redfish at some of those.
I'm just going to call the west wall sucks right now. Just going to say it. I should be more politically correct, but I got to tell you, if out of all the places in the harbor right now, it's not a place I'm going to go right now. I wouldn't waste my time unless I'm going to Cape Hayes and I just want to fish a little bit of that lower section just from habit. But really, there's just, even if the fish are there, they're just not cooperating.
Right.
Whether it's the freshwater flow or the, you know, I don't know, you got your tongue pointed at your left ear and your eyes are looking to the right and you're just, you know, but I would just say, yeah, forget the west wall for right now.
I would.
What's
have
going
to agree
on on the east side?
The
Alligator
east side,
Creek and down.
From the mouth of the Alligator Creek, they've been getting a few redfish, a few tiny trout. There's been some nice jacks right there, especially
jacks,
in the
jacks,
early
jacks,
morning.
Jacks, jacks, jacks. I love jacks.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to get your butt kicked by a little 2-pound fish, it is the way to go.
They're fun. I love catching them.
You know, like pulling the plug out of the bottom of the Gulf. I mean, those little guys just fight like crazy. If you happen to get lucky and get into some 5-6-pound plus fish, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy because, I mean, a lot of fish fight, but those fish fight like they're fighting to the death.
Yeah, it reminds you of, you know, the old cowboy who runs the horse to death. I mean, they are going to fight until there is just nothing left in them, and they get that big side facing you. And you always know because they're coming at you in a big arc.
Right.
You know, they don't come straight at the boat and straight away. They go in a big arc away from you. And if you've ever caught freshwater crappie, and for their size, they're very good fish. Picture if you had a 2-pound crappie, if you had a 2-pound jack revel, it's going to feel like a 15-pound crappie.
Absolutely. So there's no comparison to the two with how drastic the difference is on the fight.
Yeah. I mean, I've caught pretty much I mean, I can't remember how many different types of fish, and they are still the best pole there is.
Yeah.
So anyway, Maltham, Alligator Creek, we got a bunch of some jacks there, and you got some small trout and that. But working down the west side, the redfish seem east side rather. Yeah, working down the east side, the redfish seem to be kind of scattered all over the place.
Very scattered, and nothing's really happening in the back little bays and creeks the way it was a couple weeks ago. A lot of them have moved out to the edges of those little islands and points.
Yeah.
And even out in some of those deeper grass sites. Some of those guys are catching some nice redfish in like 4 feet of water, just barely on the outside edge of the bar where you'd usually be targeting trout or cobia this time of year. They're getting some pretty good redfish out there, but it's still...
You don't have to get behind the bar right now.
Two fish, zero fish. You know, it's very... It's a minefield out there, but you're really working at it to find them, but they are more consistent.
So, anyway, let's go over to Cape Hayes.
Let's get down just a little bit farther towards Pirate Harbor, because as you get down towards Pirate Harbor, that's where you start to definitely notice a little bit better of a change. Snook are starting to move in and out around all those flats. There's a lot of juvenile tarpon and mangrove snapper up inside Pirate Harbor, especially right along those real heavy oyster bars along the edge of the channel. And then right there behind Hobbs Point, you're seeing a lot of snook moving around. They're not staying for very long, and the mangrove snapper seem to be kind of following behind them. You know, the guys are catching like two or three snook, and then they catch four or five mangroves, and then they catch one snook, and then they catch a mangrove. It's kind of a trip. It's
and they're hitting the same bait as you're throwing for the snook. I mean, it's just they're not quite an aggressive. When you see that fish hit the surface jumping after your bait, or knocking your bait out of the water, it takes you a bit. But at first you're thinking it's smaller snook, and then you realize it's a snapper blowing the surface up, and it's kind of cool. Weird, but it like you said, very cool.
Yeah,
it's actually really cool to sit there, and all of a sudden you're seeing this big snook, and you get that pock. And then all of a sudden it's a different sound of a splash, and it doesn't have the pock that goes with it with the snook, but it's very distinctive. But when you're just looking, you're not really, you know, trying to find the differences, it's hard to tell the difference. But once you actually pay attention a couple times, you're going to see it easily. It's like, it's much simpler than watching a cowfish and a bonefish, because they both have the same tailing thing, and those are very, very easy to mistake for each other from a distance, but once you get used to it, you tell the difference immediately.
Right. You know, and that's been kind of the theme over there for the last probably 5 or 6 days. It could change a little bit. The white bait's been moving in and out a little bit, but nothing really super major.
They're pretty consistent. If you're just north of Pirate Harbor, there's some pretty consistent white bait. And then down south along the bar, down to Two Pines, somewhere along that stretch, you'll probably find it definitely better at Jug Creek. Two Pines, I've heard of a bunch of little snook out in the open, some redfish back by the islands. But neat thing about that Two Pines area is so many deep cuts back by the islands.
Yeah.
But be careful trying to get there. And just because you can get there right now when we've got, you know, some of the different west winds and stuff, doesn't mean you're going to get there next week.
Right.
You know, you got to be careful going in and out of there. That's really shallow, really... You want to go very, very slow when you're learning that area.
Very slow and pay close attention.
And jumping across the Jug Creek, as we were talking about, tons of white bait over there. And I think that massive amounts of white bait, smaller and bigger, is bringing in the trout.
Well, and then there's been some of those Spanish sardines have been getting washed over there on top of those Boquilla little islands. On the incoming tide, they've been moving in and out through the pass and coming up over there. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's been a mixture of some Spanish sardines over there off of Jug Creek Shoals, too. The thing is, with all that bait that's there around Jug Creek, is the amount of redfish, trout, Spanish mackerel, little sharks, quite a few snook moving in and out of there. I mean, you've taught me that, where it's just, you go there an hour or two after sunrise, and every captain's been over there and their mother and cleaned their nets out and just throwing back wounded bait fish and everything else, and they just literally chummed for you.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of chum, because they're throwing powder chum, they're throwing wet chum, they're throwing everything, and then when they get done, they're culling their live wells out. And once the charter boats are gone, usually by 7, 8, 9 o'clock, that place is just alive with fish, because they all go to get their customers or they're going here, but they're not staying there and fish.
Absolutely.
And so it's just get on the flat, drift across it, cast in a small lure or spoon or jigs or drift baits under floats, or you know, it's too shallow, too much weeds to like just free line a bait and drift it. You'll be
right.
Pulling weeds with you all the time, but under a cork or something, just drift and have a great time.
And that's a great place for a smorgasbord of fish. You don't have to have like one species in mind there. There's just so many varieties. It's kind of cool.
And if you jump outside the bar, you got monster redfish, you got big snook. I mean, there's even a few sharks there, but nothing that I would really go there to target. But
right, it's an incidental catch.
Yeah.
Over there at Patricio too is kind of the same scenario. There's been a few sharks around Patricio on those deeper cuts.
I'll be willing to lay odds there's 1,000 snook laying on Patricio right now.
That's what I was just going to get to. The snook and the redfish have been, I mean, there's definitely by far more snook than there is redfish, but there's been some really big bull reds, and they're not in groups. There's like one or twos, and they're mixed in with those snook hanging just on the outside edges of them. So if you can find yourself a few snook, don't be surprised if all of a sudden you hook a 35-inch redfish out of that whole pack.
Oh yeah, no, you're right there with that. I'm right there on you. Yeah. So now we jump across. Go jump to Cape Hayes.
Perfect.
Jumping across, skip across the harbor. Just make ourselves at home on Cape Hayes. I don't know if is there enough fish there to do that?
No, not so much. As you're skipping across, though, keep your eyes out on the incoming tide. Like I was just talking about with those Spanish sardines. You're going to think that they're thread fins, right?
I hate the way my brain works. I really do. Sorry about that. Anyway, sardines in the middle.
They almost look like thread fins at first glance, but they got a little bit of a different dimpling to them as you're watching them.
And is it a pilchard or a whitebait?
Nope, they're Spanish sardines.
Oh, okay.
Those are in the other side. They're over by Devilfish. That's the only place where you catch those. There are Spanish mackerel mixed in with them, a lot of ladyfish, and a few incidental tarpon. Not much, just an oddball here or there. But it's cool to see because, I mean, it's been a long time since we've had Spanish sardines around, especially inshore. Offshore, you see them fairly regularly this time of year, but not real close to shore. But don't hesitate to stop and make a few casts to each school as you're zipping across with a spoon or a small maverick, or even especially a rattle trap would be a good one. The smaller one, you know, that quarter or half ounce would be a good size.
Because I'd even think that eighth ounce would just rock them. That little tiny crappie rattle trap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go, you know, out there. I think that would be just a rocking bait.
Absolutely. You know, but once you get across over there to the Cape Hayes Bar, the Cape Hayes Bar has been real intermittent. It's kind of like the West Wall. It's not anything. If you're already there, it's worth stopping and checking out and fishing a little bit, but don't devote a lot of time to it.
I would get out further on the bar right now, more towards marker 5, mm-hmm. and where you've got about 3 feet of water over the bar, and there's some nice snapper. You can get the pompano and everything that's kind of coming down and then kind of swings around the bar,
mm-hmm.
and they'll cut across right there where it hits. When it's too shallow, they're not going across it. No. So they're going to wait until they find about 3 or 4 feet of water, and they're going to swing around that point to get into the harbor, get out. Great ambush spot right now for different types of species.
Absolutely.
But getting up around Turtle Bay, you said the mouths of the Turtle Bay is just loaded up right now.
Yeah, the mouths are really good with snook. The main entrance to Turtle, and then also Gallagher's Cut. Gallagher's Cut's a little bit more productive right now.
Just well, I'd say way more, but there's only two boats fit in there, so you either gotta, if you get really lucky and get a parking spot, or get inside right where the water flushes into Turtle Bay,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it comes as you go through the cut, you're gonna make a left, real hard left to avoid the bar, and then it goes down just a few feet, then cuts back through the bar again. And that's where I would be if you don't have a spot inside. I'd be inside that bar, good cast, I'd find that cut. Back off where I get a good cast, anchor up just off to one side or the other, and cast at a 45-degree angle to it.
Absolutely.
And don't worry about the boats running through there. Everybody gets upset when a boat goes through the cut they're fishing. That's the wrong thing to do. Pray and wait for a boat to come through, because mm-hmm. they're stirring up all the shrimp, all the fish, all the
crabs.
Stuff. Everything gets mixed up in that prop wash, and the fish are big enough to handle the agitation of the water. Is when that boat goes through, don't yell and fume. Put your rod ready. And as soon as that boat's back, try and cast as close behind that boat. If you got three guys fishing, it's one, two, three cast, and you two of them should hook up with fish. Mm-hmm. If you're sitting there fuming about the boats, A, you're acting ridiculous. B, you're missing the best fishing there. And, you know, C, quit being a goofball.
Yeah, you're parked in the middle of a main thoroughfare. Sorry about your luck. Get used to it or go find a different spot.
Yeah, if you don't want to deal with the boats and you don't want the great fishing, just go anchor up out in the middle somewhere. You know?
Just like you said earlier, if you see a bunch to the right, go to the left.
I like fishing the mouths of those things where you got heavy boat traffic and, you know, people don't realize, but 100, 200 horsepower prop spinning creates a massive amount of agitation. It's what keeps our harbor clean. We're in the exact opposite of Tampa and the Keys, where they have the push-pull trolling motor zones, you know, where you can't use your gas motor. And without the gas motors, our harbor would be pretty much mucked up and dead. We need those. Now, I'm kind of for some slow speed zones, but I'm 100% against anything that shuts off the gas motors, because it's the only way we get that cleaned up. We don't have the water flow. We don't have the sheet flow of these other places.
Not that we used to.
And
you know, 50, 30, well, even 20 years ago, we did.
Yeah, but
so it wasn't as much of a problem.
Yeah, and they're not dredging the pass anymore. They're not keeping that open, so we've reduced water flows.
Changed
we don't
all
get
the canals,
rains.
Dammed up half the canals and creeks and mudded them in and silted them in. You know, so it's changed everything. You know, they think that by doing the slow or no troll is going to save the grasses.
It's going to kill it.
It's not.
It's going to wipe it out.
Right, because we've changed the environment so much. 20 years ago, good idea. Today's way, not a good idea.
No. In today's world, with the amount of stuff, the fertilizer and everything comes down, simple organisms grow the fastest. That slime algae and all that other stuff that grows in the grass takes the sunlight away from the grass and kills all the grass. If they put the push-pull only zones in where you're not allowed to use, you know, motors and stuff like the kayak zones, kiss the harbor goodbye. And that's what's going to happen. But anyway, going back on, getting into Bull Bay, kind of the same scenario, except we got more fish out through the middle of Bull Bay.
Yeah.
And a lot of scattered fish on the back islands. Yeah. And while there's fish around the mouths, I'm going to be looking, for some reason, at the Bull Bay. I'm going further back in Bull Bay.
Yeah. I mean, that can be really, really fishy at times. I'm not as knowledgeable of it inside there as much, but I know a lot of those little doodlebug mounds that are in there seem to hold redfish around them, same way as the snook. They almost create like a little island ambush point rather than a sand hole.
Oh yeah, and it's, you know, get back around. They're actually called keys because they were started by mangroves, but the islands back there, and you're going to find some great fishing. Stay on the move though. Keep your trolling motor on slow. Keep pitching the trees. When you find them, you'll catch one or two, and you're going to go a ways and catch another one or two, and you're going to go a ways. But you're going to end up having a really good day. But if you got to anchor and fish, this is not your area.
No,
because if you're not moving, you have a chance of catching a bunch of fish in one spot, but it's pretty slim right now.
Exactly.
And getting out towards Devilfish and working our way down the tailing flats towards Placida.
There's a lot of redfish scattered throughout there. The schools of redfish, I know that there's still one school over there, but haven't had a lot of good positive feedback on them over there.
But unless you're Danny Latham, it's going to be really tough.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That little oyster bar right there going into towards Whidden Creek, that's had some nice redfish and snook around it. Still a few lemon sharks and a few oddball nurse sharks in there, but nothing fishable. You're just incidental coming across those things. The ladyfish are stacked along the edge from Devilfish all the way to Placida, right along that drop-off going into the intercoastal. A few Spanish mackerel mixed in with them, a lot of little black-nosed sharks. And then there's been a few redfish following them too.
In the intercoastal itself, I know there's Spanish mackerel going up and down the intercoastal.
Mm-hmm.
If you get outside the bar in the intercoastal, you got a deeper draft boat. Get relatively close to the sandbar, staying about 6 feet of water off the sandbar. And you're going to be in some Spanish mackerel and some other fish. You may even find some pompano out there.
Right, absolutely. Or those bigger redfish that are kind of lackadaisically moving around from one spot to the other. As you get closer over towards Placida, or you want to go south?
Well, actually, I'm going to just, the place we don't usually cover, but Three Sisters over to the phosphate dock.
Mm-hmm.
Some nice flounder showing up. That's going to get better and better and better by the day. November's Absolutely. Your peak month on those flounder. And there's still some nice redfish over there, big jewfish around the docks right now. And so I just wanted to kick that in. Let's go to Placida.
Well, there's still a lot of snook over there, too, along that sandbar that runs from just basically the main entrance into Miller's. That going south towards Placida, towards the phosphate dock.
Right.
There's that sandbar that comes out and drops off. It's got like that 6-inch drop off. It's fairly close to shore.
Yeah.
That's got a lot of snook hanging out along it too, and they're moving though. They're not staying in one spot. So as you're working along there, be ready to pitch something just a little bit bigger or lighten up your drag anyway, because you may hook into one of those bigger 15 to 20 pound snook that have been cruising through.
No, there. I would say you've got a good shot right through there. That's going to be your 40 inch snook. That's your 40 inch plus snook. You're going to find a lot of little bucks and some smaller ones, but you got a real good shot at your 40 inch right up in there.
Absolutely.
But coming around Placida, we got a lot of mangrove snappers, a few pompano.
A few oddball little sharks. The mangroves have been the main thing going on there. The daytime's been producing some okay ones, you know, 12 to 14 inches, which is pretty decent. But in the relative scheme of things from what we've had for our mangrove snapper year, in the nighttime down there, 14, 15, even some 16-inch mangrove snapper pretty consistently off of all the along that entire trestle system. Big bull reds have been moving in there at night with the snook fishing doing pretty good. During the daytime, still an oddball trout here and there. They haven't started moving good yet.
My snook lure out there is that suspending bomber. I like that. They've got two colors that seem to really kick butt out there for the snook. And the floaters don't do as well because I can't get the depth out of them.
Mm-hmm.
But that blue white with the orange belly, and then the black with kind of a gold in the orange belly. But they're 15s and they're suspending. They're not floating, and I can get more depth out of them, and I just cast them parallel along the pilings, letting it run as close to the pilings as possible. But some nice snook with that out there. That's Absolutely. Just been, those two are my favorite. I'd say the blue, white, orange is my number one, but the other one right now with the water getting a little darker might be better. But if I'm going to head up through the intercoastal, you're going slow through a lot of those spots. I'm going to be trolling the bomber and maybe a spoon, because there's enough fish that when you hit those slow zones, put a couple lines out. Don't let them real far behind the boat, because people have a hard time seeing fishing line out there.
Right.
You're liable to get somebody run up on your lures, and that's annoying. If you keep them a little closer and use something a little bigger, or the spoon. But when I'm doing a spoon out there, I put a half ounce weight in front of my swivel, or a quarter ounce weight in front of the swivel, try and keep it down in the water a little bit more.
Right.
And that way I can pull it just a touch faster. And the bass fishing bullet weights are my ones of choice, because they cut the water better. The egg sinker is good, but that rounder, blunter nose doesn't cut the water as well. And actually, because of the cavitation it causes, I get a couple more cutoffs. I'm having fish trying to eat the sinker.
Right.
And if I use a bullet weight, it slices the water better. You know, that pointy nose, and I don't get the break-offs, because there's a lot of toothy fish right there.
Yeah, yeah.
But getting up into Lemon Bay,
scattered redfish, a lot of scattered snook, still a lot of mangrove snapper in some of those deeper sand holes and at the entrances of some of the canals going up into Inglewood area. Trout are still doing fair, but they're going to get better over the next month. You're just not going to see it right away. You know, and then once you get up to the pass itself, there's been some pretty good amounts of snook. You know, little schools of them coming through of various sizes. A few pompano, a few flounder. The whiting, I've not had a lot of good reports on whiting in the past week, but I know they're still around. It's just been quieter, I guess, for them. What else is going on that's in there? The Ski Alley. Surprisingly, I mean, it's amazing for as, like you were just talking about, for as much traffic that comes through there, the amount of fish that can be caught in along Ski Alley is pretty amazing right now.
And it's deep. That's, mm-hmm. I think, the key thing. The fish can just go down under the boats. And the one thing about that is that if You're trolling, keep the motor at a constant tempo. The more you vary your speed, the less likely you are to catch fish.
Absolutely.
What I'll do is I'll start off around 2 miles an hour, and if I'm not hitting anything, I'll bump up to 3. Now, I very seldom go faster than that back there, but you can go 3.5 up to 4, but it's pushing the boundaries of what you're going to be able to do in that alley because of the length and the width. But 2 to 3 miles an hour seems to work best for me there.
Right.
Now, getting along the beaches, let's just take a random walk. Is there much of a difference if you're walking the beaches at Nokomis, Gasparilla, Captiva, or Ponderosa?
No, they're all pretty much about the same, except for down there around Redfish Pass, getting some more consistent reports during the daytime of snook and big redfish versus all the other passes. It's kind of a hodgepodge from one day to the next of snook, redfish, snapper, flounder, pompano, kind of a mixed bag.
But most of these passes you cannot walk up to and fish. Most of them you have to have a boat to get to. You and I are going to take a ride up there and find out exactly which beaches we can get to and where the public fishing is on some of these passes.
Yeah.
It's been about 20 years since we've done it, so I'm sure things have changed a little bit. You know, I haven't done it since before. Well, it's only been, 12, 15 years, but before Hurricane Charlie.
That's about the last time I did.
Before Hurricane Charlie, so that's been a while.
The last time I was on Sanibel was for Robert's wedding. You know, that was, what?
Long time ago.
Yeah, 12 years ago. That's the last time I was actually on Sanibel, but the last time I actually, like, drove on the island to drive around to look for fishing spots, it's been 15, 16 years.
Yeah, and we've, you know, I've been there by boat. I go by boat every once in a while. I'm blessed with the magic hull that gets great gas mileage, so I can run.
Not just great gas mileage, just a phenomenal ride.
Yeah, it's just cool boat.
It's a magic carpet ride.
It's just funny that.
Yeah, it's an awesome boat.
Anyway, but going out there, the passes, we're going to let you know. I'm going to be adding onto the website and places to go fishing as soon as we get down there and get pictures. And as long as I'm doing ads, let's go to fishingfranks.com, F-I-S-H-I-N-G, franks.com. If you like Fishing Franks memorabilia, t-shirts, keychains, all that kind of cool stuff, we actually have a web store now. So you can go on fishingfranks.com, and we got keychains, Christmas ornaments, you know, a lot of the little boutique
stuffed
stuff
animals.
We call it. No, we don't have stuffed animals on there. But this is actually the second time we've had stuffed animals at Fish and Frank's. 92 through 95, we used to carry them.
Was that the beanie?
No, it was the, they were just pillows that shaped like fish.
I remember
those. You know, the shark ones and all that stuff.
I remember those.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a couple of them that hung around here for a long time after that.
Yes.
So. But these are cute. I thought it was cool. And, you know, we get so many moms in here Christmas shopping. And they're priced, they got great prices on them. So,
absolutely.
And the stingray is really cool. I mean, to have a little stingray fluffy toy, and the hammerhead's also pretty cool,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the hammerhead's pretty cool.
So, actually, you know, it was just kind of fun. And never call me when I'm at a casino drunk, should we buy this?
Diabetic.
I was pushing a diabetic coma, and I was drunk. I didn't know I was diabetic at the time. But when I'm drunk and my blood sugar's, you know, at 300, and you're calling me to ask, should you buy something? Now, what did you expect I was going to do? I mean, you know, I'm in a casino.
I knew better. I
was
about to joke
hours.
About something like that. I was there for work. I was asking you real questions.
I was almost drunk. I was almost sober. Uh-huh. No, not even a little bit. I was pretty well toasted for 3 days, sleep 2 hours, go back drinking, gambling. Had a great time.
But it was a great time for you and a good birthday for her.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And you got to see Robert Plant.
Yeah, I got to meet Robert Plant, almost. I mean, he reached across the table. I got to say hi and, you know, stuff like that. Met some other cool people. But anyway, so much of our gambling and drinking adventures. We're going to go out in the Gulf right now. What's going on in the Gulf?
Well, Grouper officially closes tomorrow.
Red
Grouper, should say. Red Grouper is going to be done tomorrow, so you can't keep any more of those guys. But the good news is the Gag Grouper's been so crappy anyway, compared to how spoiled we got with it last year, that you don't have to now travel 30 miles out. You can stay 3 to, say, 15 miles out and just kill the mangrove snapper and the lane snapper. Lane snapper have been absolutely incredible.
Every type of grunt, spot, porgy, snapper, I mean, they're just...
Carl and his guys yesterday got a lane that was 20 inches long.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The biggest one I've seen is like 19 and a half, 19 and three quarters, right. Maybe. But he had one that was 20 inches and a whole gaggle of mangrove. He was so excited about yesterday. He was talking about it be one
what
worth
Carl it. Went out on a, you'll a probably teaching
want to,
trip.
You'll actually probably want to interview him about it. It was...
Yeah.
He had a couple firsts for himself that was cool.
We had Carl's one of our fishing instructors, and a lot of people come down. They're trying to get used to the fishing. It can get a little tough. You can hire some of our guys to go on the boat with you, and it's about half the price of what you pay for a normal charter, because you're not paying for the boat. You're just paying for the captain. And
you're paying for knowledge.
Yeah, you pay for the bait and everything else, and he shows up and shows you, brings tackle with him, so, you know, rods and reels and stuff, so you kind of get an idea of what's available. Or and he shows you, make sure you build your rigs right and how to do all that kind of stuff. And it's actually really cool. And we started doing this a long time ago, but it's actually being really popular right now. Mm-hmm. Because it's a much less expensive way of, you know, getting the knowledge and firsthand right there on the water and seeing the results of proper rigging.
Absolutely.
So anyway, but I'll interview Carl about that later.
Yeah, you will have to. But the, you know, like we were saying, the mangrove snapper and all that variety out there from like 3 to as far as 15, you really shouldn't have to go any further than that. Especially starting tomorrow, we got a cold front coming through, so the wind's going to get a little nasty out there. So you're probably going to want to stay closer to shore for a couple days.
It's supposed to be blowing out of the north.
North-northwest, actually. This front's coming more from the west. It hit Arizona yesterday,
right,
and Texas last night, and Louisiana and Alabama this morning. They were getting crushed by some really wicked storms.
So, yeah, at least we're not going to get the storms.
No, the storms are supposed to fizzle out, but it's supposed to be scattered.
It's been unbelievable. Up north, if they get rain, they get a huge storm. Out west, they get nothing. So you got droughts and flooding and everything going all around. Then you got Southwest Florida, where it's just freaking nice. I mean, this is just great.
It's like,
I mean, we've had our moments where we were not the best place to be in the U.S., but I can tell you right now, the best place in the U.S. to be.
Yeah, every year my mom frets summertime with hurricanes down here because she's out in Arizona, and just... always was it, how's it looking for hurricane season? I'm like, I don't care, it's not 3 days away, so it doesn't faze me,
right?
You know,
and I'll tell you when to worry.
And then all of a sudden, what, 2 weeks ago or whatever, they're having massive flooding, $1 million homes are getting washed out. Hurricane came up the Sea of Cortez and it broke apart and just dumped the most rain that Arizona has ever seen. They had in one night more rain than the annual rainfall, like in 2 years combined.
Right.
They had like 6 inches in one night.
Well, it's just like, I remember
I don't have to worry about a hurricane here, but they got it there.
Yeah. You know, there's no place. After Hurricane Charlie, my buddy in Costa Rica is calling me saying, you got to move down here. He's speaking to me on the phone, and an earthquake hits.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hey, well, you know, man, the whole house is shaking. I'm like, what's going on? He says, earthquake. And I'm like, and you want me to move there?
Right.
No, I like South Florida. If a hurricane's coming, if it's Category 1, yeah, you have a party. Category 2, you know, get together with some friends. Or, you know, Category 3, make sure everything's tied down. Category 4, lift your skirts, scream like a little girl, and run for Vegas.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's nothing you can do in a Category 4. It's like an earthquake. It's just beyond your control. So run away.
Yeah, but we know it's coming several days ahead of time.
Right.
Unless it's a Charlie. We still knew it was there. We still knew it was there. We had the option to drive to the other side. Some of the other family members said no, but it's not like a tornado at 2 o'clock in the morning in pitch black. You don't know where, and it's all of a sudden there. It's not like an earthquake that just all of a sudden the ground starts shaking with no signs whatsoever.
That would freak me out.
Other than the pigeons flying into the air going, get off the ground. That's it. You know, that's your only warning signs for that. So I'll stick with the hurricane.
Yeah, I'm happy
with
the hurricanes.
Coming.
The worst tornado I've ever seen down here was a Category 1, you know, F1. Mm-hmm. So, and most of them aren't even that. You know, somebody's lanai gets tore up a little bit, and they go, oh, my God, we had a tornado.
That's an afternoon thunderstorm.
Give me a break. All right. So, anyway, we were out in the Gulf. Let's do lower end St. James City coming up through my Matt Lachey.
Down around St. James City, all along the front side of it, all those little islands and some of those deeper cuts are holding some pretty good redfish, a whole lot of snook, good mangrove snapper. The deeper sand holes going all the way around the corner up towards Matt Lachey, holding a few redfish and snook. And
I'd say
and
the trout
oddball trout. I mean, there's better numbers of trout, but they're not quality size yet. You know, you're just starting to see the beginning stages of that.
And if you're doing a little bit of tarpon hunting down there and snook hunting, check the Cape Coral Bridge from there down to the Miserable Mile. You know, that cut that goes, that slow zone between the Caloosahatchee and Punta Rasa, there's a lot of snook there right now. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of snook against those mangroves. But you've got a few tarpon. I don't really know fishable numbers, but it's so iffy on the reports. But there are some tarpon there.
Yeah, and I think this rule will apply for throughout the entire harbor, but especially down there. This is the time of year when some of the tarpon are going to be getting ready to head south to get ready to migrate out of here. This time of year, you should have not only your trout tackle and a snook tackle, but you should also have a tarpon rod with you. You know, because you, over the next month, maybe even 2 months, depending on how mild our winter is, you have a very good chance of running into a huge wad of tarpon or small to moderate sized sharks. Heck, you could
even find out more after this cold front hits. If it only drops a couple of degrees, it's going to make everything better. If it drops 10 degrees, it's going to push a lot of those tarpon out of here.
Yeah, but it did that 3 years ago where it got pretty chilly in that first 2 weeks of October.
Yeah.
But yet, they were jumping tarpon December 24th in the past, like 18, 20 fish per guy.
Well, the Gulf never cooled down that much.
Right.
And I think that was the difference. The Gulf was actually pretty nice temperature, you know, for that time of year.
Exactly.
We didn't have the harsh winter like we've had. And, you know, I don't know if El Nino's out there or not or what's going on.
They're calling for a moister winter here and a colder winter up north.
So El Nino's back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It makes a lot more sense with the way, following that last storm front coming down, it looked El Nino to me. But, you know, you never hear about that stuff because
they don't talk about it anymore.
They used to give you more information, and if you have El Nino, it's going to be storms in Washington State. They're going to diagonal cut across the country, and they'll end up hitting us. And they hit Washington State. 5 days later, they hit us, maybe six. But, you know, it's just, you know what to expect. If you have an El Nino or La Nina, you know, you can kind of get things figured out and plan better. And such a frustrating thing that they just regurgitate the same garbage on every channel, and every year the Weather Channel gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every day I would wake up and do the Weather Channel. Now I watch Wake Up with Al, but then they got that AM whatever it is now.
I don't even watch the Weather Channel anymore.
I could really care less. And then I go at night to...
It's reality, you know, TV anymore.
Yeah, it's like, it's not the Weather Channel. I mean, I understand why that one cable company ain't using them anymore. I want to turn on and see the weather.
Right.
Don't care about miners and prospectors.
It's called the Weather Channel for a reason.
And even, I mean, I think some of their shows are cool. I like the one with the miners and the tow truck thing. But put it on one show a week, just like a normal station would. Don't put it on the same shows. You know, they run all their shows in one night and then rerun that whole night all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put it on for a half an hour and give me some weather back. I want the dang weather. That's what we live and die by, though. I guess, you know, we're more specific because we're going to make money if the weather's nice. We're going to lose money if the weather's bad. And we know what to order, how much money to spend. Everything in our lives revolves around the weather.
Absolutely.
Whether it's going out to fish or, you know, in the store. And I'm so sick of that. You know, I've actually turned to the internet for weather now.
Yeah.
It makes me mad. But the good thing is now, I don't have the Weather Channel on at night, so I'm not watching it. I'm actually learning guitar riffs because I go on the internet and play, you know, learn how to play lead guitar. So,
you know,
it has improved my musical abilities, even though it is frustrating.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, getting back to it, we were down in St. James City. The Pine Island Sound, the Intercoastal and Pine Island Sound between Captiva and Pine Island.
Lots of redfish still. I mean, I haven't heard of any schools down there, but there's a lot of individual fish around all of those little islands and the cuts and some of those deep pockets that are underneath the mangrove bushes. Captiva Rocks has got a lot of redfish, some snook, oddball flounder. That's the only place where I've heard of where there's been a few bigger trout, but it's only like 2-3, but nicer, you know, 20-22-inch fish. As you move up from Captiva Rocks, drifting that whole grass flat, heading up towards the old fish shacks, there's been a lot of trout scattered out in those deeper sand holes, just not any quality fish. Some small sharks, few tarpon, kind of a mixed bag. You know, it just depends on what you're kind of looking for. But if you want the snook and the redfish, definitely stick closer to those deeper cuts and those mangroves.
Another place to go slow if you don't know where you're going in Pine Island Sound.
Oh, yes.
Back that, I mean, put the throttle to neutral, wait for the boat to stop, and just tap it forward. Mm-hmm. If it's in gear, that's fast enough.
Absolutely.
And leave your motor all the way down. Do not raise your motor up. That way you can tell how deep you are. Not one depth finder in the world works in less than a foot and a half of water, and 90% of them flash out at 2 foot. So you're sitting there and it's saying 5-6, but look close. Is the number flashing? If it's saying 5-6 feet of water and that number's flashing, that means it's lost. It doesn't know where it is. It's going, help me, I'm lost. Because they don't. It's too quick pinging back and forth, and the depth finder just, the numbers flash
can't
out.
Can't register it.
Can't register it at shallow depths. You know, it's, you got to go. You can get a little bit shallower with your depth finder by reducing the, from 200, get the lowest power settings you can on it, and it will work better in the shallow water, but nothing works better than a stick. You know?
Absolutely.
If you're not sure how deep the water is, put a stick in it. And if you can touch bottom, you know exactly how deep it is. If you can't touch bottom, okay, then you know it's deeper than the fishing pole. But if you put it in, it goes to the first guide. Yeah, no,
you might have
up.
A problem real quick.
Yeah, because the water can get so dark here. You can be in 6, 8, 10, 12 inches of water and not know the bottom's
not
right
even
there.
Not close.
So slow down when you see your depth finder hit 3 feet, back that throttle off. And once you know where you're going, then you can start running. But until you know where you're going, don't.
Right.
All right. Anyway, what did we miss?
We pretty much covered it all.
Alligator Creek Reef, I think we could use a little bit on.
Oh, yeah, we skipped that one. Yep. Alligator Creek Reef's been a little slow, but the southern end has been a little bit more productive for the mangrove snapper. A few Spanish mackerel and some short cobia there. But it seems like the incoming tide there has been more productive than anything else. And it's still... It's one of those spots where, kind of like the West Wall, if I'm going by it, I might stop for a little bit and mess around, but I'm not devoting any time to it. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, it's right now it takes so much chum to even get the fish interested.
Yeah.
But if you got a good incoming tide to last half, if you got an incoming tide to last more than 4 hours, if it's a 5-6 hour incoming tide, get there on the last half of that incoming tide, and mm-hmm. you're going to see the water's going to clean up, the fish are going to turn on. But if you got that short 3-4 hour incoming tide, it's iffy at best.
Right.
So any last words of wisdom or advice?
Let's see. Advice. The advice that I will give for today is we got this cold front coming. Monday is supposed to be in the mid-60s in the morning.
Play hooky from work.
Well, play hooky from work. But the thing is, don't come running in and say, the specks are going to be biting or the trout are going to be biting because it got super cold. You put a hot cup of coffee on the counter and throw an ice cube in it. Did it really cool it off to make that happen? You know, the sheer volume of water out there, people don't realize.
It's more like throwing an ice cube in a bathtub.
Yeah.
If you got your bathtub's full of hot water and you throw an ice cube in it, it's not really changing much. Water takes much longer to react than air.
Right.
Air chills out in minutes. Water takes hours, days, or weeks to chill out.
Absolutely.
And if it stays cool for the rest of the week, it's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, you'll
if
see it drop
drops
a couple
for a
of
day,
degrees.
It's not going to change the main water temp.
Yeah, exactly. Just one of those useless things to point out.
Right, just water reacts much slower. It's
absolutely.
Like me. You react much faster than I do. I don't react that fast anymore.
And salt water even more so, because salt freezes at a much lower temperature than regular
fresh
water.
That's why we get so many fish kills. When we get that 29-degree weather here, if you're in freshwater, you get a skim of ice over the surface, and everything below that
kind of acts like a blanket.
33, 34, 35 degrees. But when you don't get a skim of ice, the water can easily hit 29. And once that water's 29, anything in it's dead. So you got to get down 2, 3, 4 feet deeper before that water temperature is able to keep the fish alive. And the deeper the water, the less change there's going to be. So
absolutely.
Anyway, I think that's about it. We're going to let Bobby take us out of here. I haven't seen Bobby in a while. I hope she's okay. I hope he's okay.
Yep.
And but fishingfranks.com is our new store. There's not fishing tackle on it yet, but each week we're going to try and add a couple new items, and we're going to be doing reels and lures and all this stuff, and we're going to try and each week key in on stuff that we're talking about, so you know what it is, and you can either buy it from the website or go to your local store and pick it up. But we're going to try and build our website as the lures are working, you know, as the tackle is working, rather than just throwing a bunch of stuff up. We're going to try and build it with the best, hottest stuff at the time. So you, and, you know, even if you don't buy the stuff, just go there and you can see it. So that way, if you're at a store, you can go, okay, I know what that is now. And you can pick it up wherever you're at. Hopefully you want to get it through us. But if not, it'll still help you figure out what we're talking about. But for right now, there's just some trivial stuff on it. We call it Fish and Frank's Boutique. And that's the name on it. So, yeah, they're the guy building the website is really picking on me with that. So, anyway, here's Bobby. And thank you guys for listening. And we really appreciate you being here. What did I do? Hit backspace. There we go.
Up this morning before the sun, grab my gear to get some fishing done. Jump in my pickup, give her a crank. I gotta talk with Fishin' Frank. Fishin' Frank is the guy who'll know where the redfish and the tarpon go. From your boat or from the bank, the man to see is Fishin' Frank. 'Cause he's got the tackle and the know-how too, and more than willing to share with you. The guys with the most fish in their tanks have surely been to Fishin' Frank's. You gotta go to Fishin' Frank's, the one who knows his Fishin' Frank.
Well, Robert, that's we'll see everybody stuff on the next one, right?
Yes.
All right. Have fun, guys. Be safe.